Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic and guide to all things cinematic. He joins us weekly. The films are Killers of the Flower Moon, The Pigeon Tunnel, and Lynch Oz.
Well, I've got three interesting movies to talk about today, and I must say I really did rather like all three of them, although for very different reasons. And the first one I would like to talk about is the new movie by Martin Scorsese, Killers of the Flower Moon. Anybody who is seriously interested in movies has to be very interested in anything that Scorsese does. And anybody who just wants to see a good movie might be interested in seeing Killers of the Flower Moon, which I found quite engaging. It is based on a nonfiction book by David Grann. I have read the book. I don't think much of it. It has interesting material in it, but I didn't find it particularly well written or anything like that. But here it has been adapted into a film. It was written by Marty Scorsese and Eric Roth. And one thing that I want to mention at the get-go here is that the movie is almost 3.5 hours long. That's a very long movie. Scorsese has been going in this direction lately. His last film, The Irishman, was also really long. I think this is a record breaker even for him. Anyway, it's a long movie, and I personally think that it justifies its running time. I found it watchable and interesting and just engaging and absorbing all the way through from beginning to end. So, what is the movie about? The movie takes place in the 1920s. Some people have called it a kind of a Western, although I think it's really more of a melodrama and certainly a crime drama. And back in the 1920s, this really happened. In Oklahoma, there were a bunch of murders that took place among an Indian people known as the Osages, the Osage Nation. And what happened was, and the movie sketches this out rather rapidly, but it's there, oil was discovered. The Osage people, like many Indian peoples, did not have a whole lot in the way of material wealth. They lived a fairly oppressed and deprived way of life, as we might say, underprivileged. And then oil was discovered under their land, and holy cow, that changed everything. And again, this is only sketched out now very briefly in the movie. It's sketched out in more detail in the book. But arrangements were come to so that the Osages became fabulously wealthy because they sort of collectively owned all of this oil that was under the land. But white people immediately moved in and started taking advantage of the situation in all sorts of ways. And that's the backdrop to this movie. And again, I think this is filled in rather sketchily in the movie, but it's there. So we have basically these fabulously wealthy Osage Native Americans, and we have a lot of white people around who have taken very great advantage of them. So in this situation, against this background, we meet the main characters of the movie. One of them, played by the very great Robert De Niro, who is, I haven't checked this out, but he's probably made more movies with Scorsese than any other individual actor, and I think that Robert De Niro is one of the great actors of our age, just as I feel that Martin Scorsese is one of the great filmmakers of our age. He plays this very, very wealthy man who is sitting on all kinds of wealth and lives in a very wonderful house out there in rural Oklahoma, and again, he's just a person with a whole lot of power. And in comes his nephew, played by Leonardo DiCaprio, another very frequent Scorsese collaborator. And DiCaprio kind of moves in and gets to know his uncle, and you gradually realize that there is some bad stuff going on here. There's some underhanded stuff going on here, and not necessarily that these two characters, the uncle and the nephew, are in all these things together. The nephew, the younger man, the DiCaprio character, seems to be just kind of a thug. Doesn't act like a thug, he doesn't look like a thug, but he appears to be a thug, whereas the De Niro character is much more kind of a wealthy power broker. Anyway, there the two of them are, and they are living together, and they are going through various things. And then another extremely important character is the younger character, the DiCaprio character, marries a Native American woman, and she is played by Lily Gladstone. And my gosh, it is a wonderful performance. I think she is a really, really major presence in this movie, and I think she is simply excellent. So those are our three main characters. We have the uncle, De Niro. We have the nephew, DiCaprio, sort of a thug. And we have DiCaprio character's wife. And then what we have also going on in the movie, and this is crucial, is that Indians are dying. Native Americans are dying mysteriously, and often there are no investigations into their death. And this continues through much of the film. It turns out that poisoning is involved, although not always. Sometimes somebody is simply shot in the head and left in a ditch somewhere, that kind of thing. And then eventually, very late in the movie, in comes a member of the investigative bureau that later became the FBI, played by Jesse Plemons. And he is a good guy, and he is an investigator, and he is trying to get to the bottom of this series of murders that have been going on for a very long time. So that's what the movie's about. Again, I'm just going to repeat, I think it's a really, really, really wonderful movie. Scorsese's last really long movie, The Irishman, I thought was kind of dull. You know, a major work, very ambitious, had a tremendous amount of scope and scale, but ultimately kind of dull. Never generated any real energy. I feel very differently about Killers of the Flower Moon. It has a lot of energy. It has a lot of brilliant acting. I have to say, Scorsese has just a way with actors. It doesn't always work, but I don't think De Niro has ever been much better. I don't think DiCaprio has ever been much better. They are really, really good in this movie. And as I said, Lily Gladstone is absolutely marvelous. I think she's going to become a much more important presence on the acting scene than she already is. There's also, by the way, people in the movie who have smaller roles who it's always just fun to see. People like John Lithgow and various others. I won't go through them. Brendan Fraser is in it as well. So Killers of the Flower Moon. If you have 3.5 hours, it's a really, really solid, strong, engaging piece of work, a really important true crime drama. And hey, it sheds some light on a very unfortunate period of American history, what went on with the oppression of Native Americans, rich Native Americans, back in the 1920s in Oklahoma. So a good movie. Next movie I want to talk about is really different, The Pigeon Tunnel. It is a documentary, and it is a documentary by one of the great documentary makers, Errol Morris. Errol Morris came along, many a long year ago, back in the 80s, and he developed a style of documentary making that was the exact opposite of the cinema verite that has been so fashionable for such a very long time and remains fashionable today. Cinema verite tries to give you the impression that you're just seeing reality as it unfolds before your eyes. The camera is just there, and it shows us what happened, and there's no commentary, and we just see that. So Errol Morris developed a style that was the direct opposite of that, where people talk right into his camera, and they tell us what he wants to hear, or at least what he wants to ask them, and we don't have many cutaways to the real world or anything like that. And he's made a lot of really fascinating documentaries and some that don't work so well. I think The Pigeon Tunnel is his best in a very long time, and here's what it's about. It's about the very great novelist John le Carré, who is best known for writing spy novels. And that is very, very much what this movie is about. So we now find out about John le Carré. His real name is David Cornwell. And one thing I wish this movie got into a bit more is why he took a pen name, a nom de plume, John le Carré. But of course, he's known to almost everybody as John le Carré. And how he got into the novel writing business and the really fascinating background that he has. And it kind of helps to explain when you know what his life was like, and the movie gets very much into that, before he started writing, why he started writing, the kinds of novels that he did. So, okay, he had a father. That's one crucial thing in this. And his father was a con artist. He was somebody who just loved deceiving people, loved lying to people, loved exaggerating things, and loved totally making things up. And that's the kind of person that le Carré's father was. He died a long time ago, but he had a tremendous influence on le Carré's life. That idea of a father who you couldn't trust, and in fact, a father who nobody could trust, but who le Carré, it was his father. He looked up to him. He admired him in a lot of ways. Okay, le Carré was very bright. He went to Oxford. He got a terrific education. And then, yeah, he went into the spy business. He went to work for British intelligence. He's British. He worked for British intelligence for quite a long while. So he was a spy, and he was engaged with other spies, and he was in the spy game. So that's another very important part of his background. And then he became a novelist, a writer. And of course, he started writing the thing, the kinds of novels that deal with things that he was very familiar with in his actual life, both his childhood, his young adulthood, and his adulthood. So that's what The Pigeon Tunnel is about. It takes its title from a conceit that Le Carré has used in a number of his novels. Early in the film, Le Carré says that there's almost no novel of his that didn't have as a working title The Pigeon Tunnel. And what The Pigeon Tunnel is it's something that is used by people who shoot pigeons for sport. And what happens is the pigeons are released from this tunnel and they fly into the air and people shoot at them with their big guns. However, if a pigeon gets away, the pigeon, being a pigeon, returns to where it started from and ends up back in the tunnel again. So this is a metaphor for what, a real-life metaphor for what Le Carré sees as going on in a whole lot of the spy world, and I think just of the world in general. You think you're flying free through the sky, and this time you don't get killed, but you end up right back having to go through the same thing over again. In any case, I found The Pigeon Tunnel to be an absolutely fascinating movie. Sometimes Errol Morris is very much in his movies. This time you don't see him really at all. You hear his voice asking questions from time to time, and certainly Le Carré is talking directly to him. That's very obvious through most of the film, probably the whole film. But mostly the focus is on Le Carré. He is the person on camera. Different camera angles, occasional cutaways to other things, but mainly this is a movie that focuses directly on Le Carré in its visuals and in its audio track. And I just found him a wonderful, incredibly intelligent, really, really nice-seeming person with a whole lot to say. He's very old in the movie. He has died since the movie was filmed. But somebody who really wants to open up and be candid about many aspects, maybe not all aspects, but many aspects of his life and career. And I just found him fascinating to listen to. I think he's a terrific novelist, and I think that he is just a wonderful person to listen to. So if you're interested in spies, if you're interested in literature, if you're interested in movies, The Pigeon Tunnel is definitely one of the better films I've seen this year. And for our final film today, I would like to talk about Lynch Oz. And yep, it's about David Lynch. And yep, it's about The Wizard of Oz. The Wizard of Oz, of course, being an incredibly classic film that came out in 1939. And it is usually thought of as a movie for children, although it's a very sophisticated and very, it's just a wonderful movie, as cinema. It's terrific. But it turns out that according to this documentary, and the documentary makes a very strong case, the movie has been a tremendous influence on David Lynch, who makes movies which almost entirely are the opposite of movies for children. David Lynch's movies are rightly famous for having very often a whole lot of violence, a whole lot of sex, a whole lot of extreme, what we call nowadays sometimes adult content. And yet, it turns out, and by the way, he himself says this in the movie, he's very open about this, it turns out that The Wizard of Oz was an enormous, tremendous, crucial inspiration for him, which has stayed with him throughout his life. So this is a whole movie about relationships between David Lynch's movies and his career and his life in general and The Wizard of Oz. And the movie shows us a whole lot of clips from The Wizard of Oz, and it shows us a whole lot of clips from David Lynch movies. The very great Eraserhead, the very amazing Blue Velvet, the science fiction movie Dune. He did the first movie adaptation of that story. The Lost Highway, Mulholland Drive. We get clips from all these David Lynch movies, very often juxtaposed, either right before or right after clips from The Wizard of Oz, or sometimes split screen, side by side. And it's just an eye-opener. It's just a lot of fun to go through all these things. I don't think this movie is deep or anything. It doesn't get into any advanced philosophical analysis of the influence of The Wizard of Oz on David Lynch. But it's just such fun to whiz your way through all of these clips. I just had a really good time looking at it. Now, each chapter, the movie is divided into about half a dozen chapters. Each one is not narrated by a different filmmaker. And even though the movie was, by the way, the movie was directed and written by Alexandra O'Philippe, Philippe is credited as writer, but it really does appear that the narrators of these different chapters each wrote their own narration. They're all speaking, it seems, very personally about all this. And a couple of them are pretty well-known filmmakers. One of them is John Waters, for example. My gosh, talk about another director and filmmaker who has a lot of adult content in his movie. You can't beat John Waters. Turns out The Wizard of Oz has a crucial influence on him, a movie he has loved throughout his life, throughout his career. There's others. A lot of the filmmakers, right? David Lowery is there, and a number of others who are not quite well known as these people. And we have a lot of archival footage of everybody from Judy Garland, who of course starred in The Wizard of Oz, to TV people like Jay Leno. So again, it's not a deep movie, it's not a profound movie, it's not a philosophical movie, but it's just a wonderful lot of fun. Seeing all these clips from The Wizard of Oz, seeing all these clips from David Lynch movies, seeing how they relate to each other, how you can connect them. It's just for anybody who loves movies or anybody who just loves the fun of movies, I had a good time watching it. So Lynch Oz, another movie that I can recommend this time around, and that is my very recommendation-heavy story this week.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films Killers of the Flower Moon, The Pigeon Tunnel, and Lynch Oz.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.